Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome back to the Reborn Identity Blog Talk Radio with Vivian Kelly and Ruthie Munoz. Please enjoy our music selection for this weekend, If We Obey by Angela Bryant Brown from her new release, Angela For You.
If my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and will forgive their sins and will heal their land.
Lord, I come into your presence with thanksgiving and praise. I bow before your throne with the worries of my day. For I know that you will hear me when I kneel.
There by Angela Bryant Brown. Hello, Ruthie. Are you online with us, Ruthie?
I am.
Okay, now we got you. How, Ruthie, how are you? How's everything going?
I'm good. How are you?
You know, blessed.
left. And that song just made me think, you know, it's true. If we obey, we truly will be blessed. Well, greetings and welcome back to another segment of the Reborn Identity. This is Vivian and
Ruthie.
Well, if you are like me, you're not falling shy from holiday decorations, holiday music, and holiday food. I mean, it's just everything. But it just seems like every year it gets a tad bit sooner than we would like. What do you think about that, Ruthie?
Well, you know, I'm not like you in terms of, like, the decorations and the music and food so far. However, I do have to agree with you in that it seems to be starting a little bit earlier. I mean, they started Black Friday sales way before Thanksgiving. So, yeah, I would have to say that you're right in that aspect.
Yeah, and you would think that you know, it makes it much harder for somebody that is trying to get over the problems of that started way in the beginning of the year, actually started several years ago, but now it just seems like many people are losing their jobs and their homes, a lot of displaced families. And to have the holiday season starting, like, it seems like in July, it's just no reprieve, no reprieve. This year I'm not going to put up a Christmas tree. I'm not going to do anything. This year I'm going to eat as minimal as possible the holiday food because, of course, you know, I start my New Year's resolution in September. Why? Because it takes 30 days to master good habits. And I like to celebrate on the 1st of January going, yes, I've completed this for 30 days or more than 30 days. I'm not the type of person to wait until, like, the 1st of January to make my New Year's resolution. How about you?
Oh, my. Well, I don't make New Year's resolutions because I never keep them. And this year, I don't think I'll be celebrating. I'm struggling with the holidays this year, so I'm dreading them. For me, it's a painful time right now, and I'm not ready to join in yet.
And I guess I think that's the feeling of from a lot of people, because, like I said, I was not going to put a holiday, you know, I was not going to decorate. I'm not going to, because I just don't know. This year, I'm not depressed, but I'm not happy. I see a lot of things happening that are way beyond my control. And it's just, I don't know. I love the holiday season. I just don't like the expectations behind it. You know, and it just puts a lot of pressure on a lot of people, a lot of pressure that shouldn't be. Holiday season is to, you know, get to know a little bit more about the family, and some people don't have family to go and reminisce of the good old days. So obviously you're not getting ready for the holiday season.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, Thanksgiving is a really special time, and I've always liked the fact that Thanksgiving is set apart from Christmas and New Year's in terms of it's more family-oriented type of thing, and you keep it within the family, and you really, really don't stray too much from that norm, with a few exceptions here and there. But, you know, like I said, for me, it's I'm between a rock and a hard place, because it's, you know, my mom recently passed, and she passed around the holidays, and so it's a bittersweet time for me. It's a time that I'm really struggling with, but at the same time, I have my, you know, my daughter that needs to spend that time with me during Thanksgiving and so forth. So you know, I don't know. And then I have work, you know, work restraints, and so I'm not sure yet what's going on. But, you know, whatever happens, it'll be a solemn occasion. I don't know that it'll be a super joyous occasion, but we'll make the best of it and enjoy it as best we can.
So tonight's segment is the holiday season the most wonderful time of the year? And from what we're seeing individually, it might not be the most wonderful time of the year because for so many reasons.
Yeah, I think it depends on, you know, your situation. Everyone has a story and everyone has, you know, some life experience. And it, you know, sometimes the holidays are a great time, you know. It's weird because at the same time for me, like this week, it's my daughter's birthday, it's my birthday, it's Thanksgiving, but it's also a kind of a celebration of the last time I got to see my mother alive. And so, you know, is it the most wonderful time of the year? Under different circumstances, it would be, but for me right now, it's not, and that's, you know, about as real as I can get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but,
and I hear you. Uh-huh.
No, but I think, you know, that because of where I'm at, you know, doesn't mean that someone else shouldn't go out and enjoy it, if that makes any sense.
Oh, no, definitely. The world continues going, you know, and doing what it is. But, you know, because of what I'm going through and you're going through, I feel like we should take the time and look around us to see who else is going through that as well, and see what we can do within our own neighborhood, within our own churches, within our own groups. Because as we are feeling what we're feeling and experiencing loss, when depression kicks in, especially on the holidays, I think there should be more of an understanding. You know, I've told you before, my husband, in certain circumstances, he's called me a Klingon, and my favorite pastime saying used to be, "Oh, get over it," but you can't. Some things you just can't, and so therefore, I think that's why we created the program. Is the holiday season the most wonderful time of the year, and help other people understand that they're not alone. They're seriously not alone. So do you want to introduce our guest for tonight?
Yes, but I'm like, I'm really freaking out over over butchering her last name. But I am so excited and glad to be able to introduce an amazing young lady. She is the Director of Programs, DBSA, which stands for Depression and Bipolar Support Alliance in San Diego, California. And her name is Michelle Ruzio. Tonight, Michelle will give us resources and information about the programs available for those battling depressions or for those individuals who care about their loved ones and find themselves hopeless. There is a solution and resources that may be able to help you out.
Okay. Well, our lines are open for those who might want to call in. It's 818-572-8027 or 877-497-4102. That's a toll-free number, 877-497-4102. And I'm going to be bringing on Michelle. Michelle.
Good evening.
Good evening, Michelle. How are you doing?
Oh,
good
I'm
evening.
A little closer, but I'm okay. How are you?
Well, I'm doing fine. Ruthie?
I'm doing good. I apologize. I hope I didn't butcher your last name.
Oh, no, it's perfect.
Good.
Well, we thank you,
know, you
so much for joining us.
Yes, thank you
no
so
problem.
Much. You know, Michelle, I met you about a year and a half ago. I was walking in the American for Suicide Prevention Walk for a young lady called Alexandra Rachel Zepeda, which, by the way, I I dedicated my first book for her. She was 21 years old when she took her life, and there was depression there. And you know, since then I have been receiving a lot of emails from you, literature that's really informative about this amazing program. And you know, I recently spoke to you, and just thought the things that you were saying, you're really truly an advocate. You really truly are someone helping someone out there, people out there. And please let us know. There's a lot of amazing amounts of myths that are out there regarding depression. And there are statistics in the United States with people dealing with depression. It's both alarming and disturbing. Can you tell us more about that?
I think a great place to start would be, what is depression? Like, a lot of people don't, they think depression is, just feeling sad. But it's not always that. And I have a list here that you probably picked up at that walk of things that depression can look like. So it can look like prolonged sadness or unexplained crying. Sometimes people cry a lot. Sometimes people can't cry at all. Changes in appetite and sleep patterns, anxiety, irritation. You might get angry all the time. You might feel super tired or have unexplained aches and pains. Lots of guilt or worthlessness, hopelessness. Can't concentrate. Nothing makes you happy. Recurrent thoughts of death, sometimes substance abuse. And sometimes people see these behaviors and they don't equate them to, this is an illness. I can get help for it. But it actually is, which is a cool thing. Statistically, 1 in 5 people in the U.S. population, according to SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, were affected by mental illness in 2009. That's 45 million Americans, 20%. And statistically, 1 in 4 adults will experience major depression sometime in their life. So it's a pretty big number.
Wow. 45 million in 2009.
Mm-hmm. I'm dumbfounded.
Yeah. The sad thing is that less than 40% of those people receive the services that they need.
And you know that depression exists, but I think it's one of those taboo subjects that no one likes to talk about.
It is. It's a stigma is what they call it. That thing that says, we can't talk about this voodoo subject.
Yet it's prevalent. It's there. Yet it affects 45 million.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
1 in 5.
And you said that there's a book out there that's you know, well, there's many books. I've gone to Barnes and Noble, there's many books on depression and how to cope with depression, how to live with depression, how to dance with the depression. So there is a need for more resources.
Correct.
Especially in the Christian community, I think.
Well,
because
in the Christian
community. Mm-hmm. No, I was just thinking, you know, in terms of going back to it being taboo, you know, in society in general, I think in the Christian community it's even more taboo because there is an even bigger stigmatism applied to it.
Right, because you're supposed to be happy and your life's supposed to be wonderful and you're supposed to be messengers of God who spread the good news and, you know, wanting to die and feeling like crap all the time. That's just not good news, you know?
Right.
Oh, no.
It isn't good news. And yet we've known, I'm not theologically sound here because I do know enough, and I've heard and I have read. Some of the disciples were depressed. You know, they were doing things that, you know, you would look at them as a depressed state. Yet
right. We
as Christians are not supposed to be depressed because we take it to the cross, we take it to the, you know, to our knees and we pray. But I've heard so many conversations, you know. In fact, I heard this couple that they were teaching me how to become a lay evangelist, and they're wonderful people. But in that church, someone was preaching, and they said, and you know, if you were in Christ, you wouldn't need psychologist. You wouldn't have any problems with depression. And I'm going, ooh, that is scary. Because
that is scary.
It gives people this misconception oh, if I'm depressed, I'm demon-possessed, I am a bad person, I am not worthy, and actually it becomes more depressing.
Right, and you create the core belief that you said, like, I'm a bad person, you know, I am not a good person, I don't deserve good things, I'm worthless. And then you spend years and years in cognitive therapy trying to undo that belief. You know, like,
mm-hmm.
being depressed doesn't mean you're a bad person. It means you've got a problem that you need to get help for.
Right,
just
that
like
needs
if
to
you
be
have
addressed,
migraine
but...
headaches.
Right.
You have
exactly.
allergies, migraine headaches, you have fainting spells, you're going to go to seek a doctor. I mean, it's funny that we can go see a doctor for headaches, but we can't go see a doctor or a mental health professional for our thought process. And some of us have been raised in situations where it's a lot of years of undoing. And just because we're Christians, we can't pray it out. We can't. I mean, for some people it might work. For some people, they say, oh, well, you know, I had one drink. Last drink I had was over 30 years ago, and I'm not drinking ever again. Or I used to deal with voices in my head, and I prayed them out, and now I'm okay. Well, that's good for you, but that doesn't mean it's going to work for the next person.
Right. Hey, if prayer works for you alone, go for it. But if it doesn't,
and sometimes
it's okay to seek
and
help.
And sometimes it does work, right? But
yeah, sometimes
you know,
it doesn't work.
But I was going to say that, you know, I believe that churches are more and more trying to embrace the fact that depression does exist and how to deal with it from a Christian perspective. And I've found several churches, both, you know, in New York City and here in Houston, that actually offer counseling and have licensed therapists or mental health professionals available for you. And I think it's a neat thing that it's available. And I think that from my perspective, you know, having gone to see a Christian therapist and having gone to see a non-Christian therapist, I like the fact that I can go in there and I can talk about whatever's going on in my mind and still talk about God, and someone's not looking at me like I'm crazy and demon-possessed because I'm bringing up God. Does that make any sense?
Yeah,
it does. I'm going to step out on a limb and say that a good therapist, whether they are religious or not, should not look at you like you're crazy when you talk about God. It's that, you know, kind of non-judgmental thing. Like, if you mention
mm-hmm.
God and your therapist tells you you're crazy, that's a bad sign.
Definitely a bad sign.
I mean, like,
that's good to know.
Yeah. They might not be the right clinician for you, should I say.
Let me ask you a question, though. You know, without going into, you know, other things in this that's happening in this world, I keep hearing, though, in churches, okay, so not even in churches, in circles where Christian people are meeting, that people that are depressed, they can harm other people or that they can harm themselves. Now, statistically, I mean, do you have anything statistically that you know, can take that myth out? I mean, anybody can help hurt anyone, and they don't have to be depressed.
Actually, yes, I do have statistics on that. Let me find it right here. Pulled out the paper today. I don't have the number, but people with mental illnesses actually commit less violent acts than people in the general population. However, people with mental illnesses are twice as likely to be the victims of violence. So when you see things like, I get so angry when I watch the news, because every bad thing that happens, it's like, okay, wait 3 seconds, and they're going to mention that this person had a mental illness. And it does the rest of us a large injustice, you know, because most of the people who are walking around depressed every day, hating their life, they're not going to go out and kill you. Like, they're more likely to hurt themselves. Does that make sense?
Yes, and you know what, working in the homeless community, working, going out to, like, Compton, downtown Los Angeles, to Skid Row, and in different areas, you know that the people that are living on the streets do have some sort of mental illness, and they stay
most
to themselves. Most of them, exactly. Most of them, thank you for clarification. And they're staying to themselves. They're not bothering anyone. And yet, the first thing I hear, be careful. You know, people have mental problems. And I'm like, you know, I go down there and nothing happens to me. Thank God. However,
I know.
That's
I ride the trolley and I walk downtown to get to the trolley because I don't drive. And I spend a lot of time with people that you know, everyone else considers shady. They're like, why are you around those people? They're dangerous. I'm like, dude, I have awesome conversations with these people. Like, they understand, you know?
So can a person with diagnosed with depression, they can get better. They can, I mean, what resources are out there? Let's say for your organization, I have a friend of mine. I want her to go there or him to go there. He's 25, 30, whatever it is. He lives in San Diego. He lives anywhere in the United States, and he wants to get better, but he doesn't want to do it by himself. Are there programs that you can actually take your friend or your family and together learn and go through the process of, you know, of talking about their depression?
Yes, there are. And you had two separate questions there. One, is depression treatable? And two, how do you do it? The first answer is yes, it is treatable. It is the most treatable of the mental illnesses. It has the most treatment options and the highest success rates. For every episode that goes untreated, though, your chance of relapse increases substantially. Like if you've had, I believe the statistic is, if you've had four or more untreated episodes of major depression, your likelihood of relapse is 90%. But if you should choose to seek help, DBSA, for example, is it's kind of like a chain of support groups, and they're all over the country. There's over 1,000 groups right now. And DBSA is a peer-led support group, so it's people who have been there, family members, friends, people with the illness, helping each other through it. So I'm a member of DBSA. That means that I have a mental illness, and I help other people with mental illnesses. And it's a place where we can get together and talk about how to deal with our lives, learn new coping skills. I know my chapter, I can't speak for any of the other chapters, but the DBSA San Diego chapter has a family and friends group and consumer groups. They call patients with mental illnesses consumers. I'm not quite sure why. But there are a lot of opportunities. Like DBSA San Diego offers support groups on 2 days a week and social events, a free lecture series. We do outreach. We do all sorts of stuff. Everything that we can to help improve the lives of people with mood disorders. We're in contact with people outside the group. It's like a family. We even, like if people have court-ordered groups that they have to go to, we can help them with that too. We'll sign off on their forms. If you wanted to go to a class, like a learning-type session with your family, NAMI actually has a great program called Family to Family. And it's a 12-week program, I believe, and they teach the family members who have been through it, teaching the newer family members, like, what is this thing called mental illness, and what does it look like, and how do I deal with it, and what if my loved one does this, and it's kind of like a crash course or boot camp for learning how to deal with things. There's also a really awesome organization here in San Diego. It's called Impact Young Adults, and they're not a treatment group. They're a social group for young adults with mental illness, I believe 18 to 35. And it provides an inclusive environment where it's not therapy, it's not treatment. They're getting together to have fun, to be in a community where everyone understands. And it's a really great program.
Now, let me ask you a question. Could someone live with depression and not know it?
You know, I thought about that question. I think from my own personal experience, I knew something was wrong. I just didn't know what it was. Like, I didn't know what the name for it was, but I just knew that something wasn't right with me. Does that make sense? Like, you just know when something's off in your body. Like, I've never met someone who had depression who, like, if I brought it up and they didn't bring it up first, said, oh, no, I don't have that. Like, what are you talking about? I have no idea what you're talking about. Usually they'll say, like, yeah, I have been feeling kind of down. You know, thanks for noticing. Like, it's a taboo thing to say to somebody, hey, you seem kind of depressed lately. But sometimes people need you to say that because they're not going to come up to you and say, like, hey, I don't really know you that well, and I'm really scared to talk about this, but, you know, here's the deal. A lot of people won't do that.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, really quickly, I remember asking someone that I love very much, because I don't understand, I understand short-time depression, or short depression meaning, like, you know, the loss of someone, or, well, not someone, something like a job, or the loss of, you know, financial wealth, or whatever the case may be. And that's kind of depressing. But I was asking someone who's clinically depressed, what is the difference between stress and depressed? And she said, I don't know the difference. I go, well, I can get depressed because I got an F on my final at the university, but I can get stressed out because I didn't study for the test. And so there's two differences. And she was like, there's no difference. Depression is depression.
There kind of is a difference, because if you get an F on a test and you say, oh, I'm so depressed, and you have three bad days and then you're fine, that's not clinical depression. That's you had an F on your test and your life sucked for a few days. I think where the difference between stress and clinical depression, I mean, depression is depression, yes. Feeling sad, that sucks. But when you define clinical depression, there are, I believe it's 5 out of the 9 criteria in the DSM for depression that you meet for 2 weeks or longer. So it's based on length and severity.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Okay. Yes,
so
I
like,
had that in psychology class, yes. Length,
yeah,
and
if
severity.
You're stressed, yeah, if you're stressed, usually you have more symptoms of anxiety or agitation or irritation. You're usually kind of ramped up and kind of just jittery, you know, the stress feeling, like you drank too much coffee,
right,
and you're just freaking out. In depression,
mm-hmm,
there can be irritability with depression, but for most people, it's more of a low energy. There's something called, I forget the word. It's the inability to experience pleasure, like things that you do that usually make you happy, just nothing. You just flat. You can't. Like, you could win the lottery and you'd be like, okay. Like, what is lunch? You know?
I said that because that's the same thing as with my friend. There's no wavering back and forth, or even, you know. However, another friend of mine, they're 1 minute really depressed, the next minute they're very happy, but then they fall back into depression immediately. And then they're bipolar, and they're clinically bipolar. And I'm like, wow, that's just
that's
from one extreme to the other. Exactly. And that kind of gets me a little bit like, okay, I need to have an even keel. So, you know, let me ground myself. So before I go and hang out with these people or with my friend, I just kind of go, okay, I know what I'm going to go into, and I cannot be agitated and vacillate each moment that they change.
Right.
However,
and depression is
yeah.
a part of bipolar disorder, and it's, you make a good point that we all have to adapt to the people around us. You know, like, I have friends that I know I cannot go to and tell them I'm having a bad day because they can't handle it. You know, like, I don't see this person
mm-hmm.
when I'm upset. I don't see that person when I'm happy. Like, it
right.
doesn't work.
So I prepare myself, and that's how I say, okay, you know what? I'm going to go to this event. Who are there, and can I handle at that point the type of people? Because I feel myself that I need to be mentally grounded, and I don't like wavering very quickly. I am not.
Right,
I don't know,
and you're using
issue.
Your coping skills to deal with their symptoms,
mm-hmm.
which is basically the goal for everyone, to have enough coping skills to be able to deal with your own feelings and the feelings of the people around you. So, like, if you can't handle your own feelings, if you feel like you're completely out of the control all the time and you have no way to deal with that, you're in some serious danger.
Mm-hmm.
But if you learn how to control yourself, then you can use those same coping skills to deal with other people. And it's a process of learning, oh, well, I can use this technique in this situation, or maybe if I do deep breathing, or maybe I need to take a time out. You know, maybe I need to call my doctor because this is not working.
Yes, exactly.
So let me ask you a question. In terms of mental illness, of depression, clinical depression, and other types of mental illness, how does that affect someone's livelihood?
What do you mean?
Or does it affect it at all? Like the possibility is, does the fact that you have a mental illness or that you're suffering with clinical depression affect you in terms of being able to work?
Yes, it does. Having any illness affects your ability to work, but mental illness is, I don't remember which number it was, but it was like, I want to say 2, don't quote me, I might be wrong, the number 2 or one of the very top reasons in the entire world that people do not work. I have a statistic here that mental illness is more common among jobless people, 27.7% more common, and 10% of the unemployed are depressed, whereas only 5.4% of the people who worked full-time are. I know I see at the group a lot, and with myself, like, people aren't ill all the time. You know, the illness ebbs and flows. So when you're doing better, yeah, some of the people can hold down a full-time job, and that's fine. But I know, especially with myself, when my symptoms get worse, I can't concentrate. I can't, you know, handle little stressors, and I get just the interactions with me and my coworkers. I can't handle it. I end up just usually getting fired or quitting or something. It's just, it very much interferes with what you're trying to do, because if you can't think straight and you can't remember stuff and you don't want to be at work or alive and everyone around you is driving you nuts, you're not going to do your job very well. I mean, even if you really want to, you know. But that's not to say that people can't get better and go back to work, because they do.
Right, and there is a way to be functional with mental illness and live a stable life. And
right.
I guess that's what I was trying to get to.
Yes, there are so many people who are functioning day-to-day, working and taking care of their families, and they have a mental illness. They're getting the treatment that they need, and it's working for them. And that's great. I mean, you don't have to suffer forever. You don't have to be, you know, on the outskirts of society. You can be successful with a mental illness.
Oh, wow. Well,
that is good to hear.
With that said, let's take a little break, and we'll be right back. If you don't mind, we'll take a break, and we'll have some more questions. And I pulled up some information on famous people with mental illness, and I think you'll be surprised.
Community resources.
American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, AFSP, is a leading national not-for-profit organization exclusively dedicated to understanding and preventing suicide through research, education, and advocacy, and to reaching out to people with mental disorders and those impacted by suicide. For more information, please call 888-333-2377 or visit their website at www.afsp.org. Once again, their number is 888-333-2377. And DBSA San Diego, the Depression and Bipolar Support Alliance, is a nonprofit organization dedicated to improving the lives of people with mood disorders and their friends and family. They provide free peer-led support groups every Monday and Thursday, including holidays, as well as free lecture series, library, outreach, and social events. DBSA San Diego will be hosting a free lecture December 6th by John Lorman about insurance options for pre-existing conditions. For more information, please visit www.dbsasandiego.org or call 858-444-6776. Once again, 858-444-6776. Mental illness is tough, but you're not alone. The leaders and members of DBSA San Diego have been there. They can help.
Wow, that's I hope everybody's there. Famous people with disorders is amazing. I found some things. Abraham Lincoln. Did you guys know that?
No. What disorder did he have?
Hold on a second. I think I have. I'm trying to get her back online here. Yeah, I'm sorry, Michelle, for a minute we lost you there. But I found out that Isaac Newton, Abraham Lincoln, and I don't know what Abraham Lincoln had. He suffered from severe debilitating and occasional suicide depression.
He had major depression.
Wow. And Vincent Van Gogh, oh, yeah, definitely. Beethoven. Winston Churchill.
Vincent Van Gogh seems to have a very creative side to it, if you don't feel yourself.
I noticed that. I noticed that. I mean, I was like, wow, interesting. Judy Collins. It's just unbelievable, some of these people that have, Carrie Fisher, Postcards from the Edge. Is that one of the books that she wrote? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's interesting. Vivian Lee.
Wasn't she also on Star Wars?
Yes, she was. I think that was one of her major roles.
She was Princess Leia, right?
She was Princess Leia.
Even Charles Dickens, the English author. And so all these people that you, Margot Kidder, and I remember hearing how they were protecting her while she was, she left for a while, and she ended up homeless. And that's what I read in one of the articles, and how they protected her, and she's now an advocate. So there are people, and they're functioning. I mean, to be a president of the United States, they're functioning. So mental illness, although it's debilitating, there can be resources that can help.
Definitely. And I grew up in dance and theater, and I mean, you have to be crazy to live that lifestyle, you know? And I don't use crazy as a bad term, just kind of like, if you're a normal person, if you're not just a little out there, like, you won't survive, because it takes a lot to do a creative sort of thing for a living, to deal with the situations. And it's amazing what these people go through with mental illness and still are successful.
One thing I noticed. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay. No. One thing I noticed that in theater specifically, I was dealing with trying to transform from being normal to a character to being normal again. It was just really hard for me. Hence, I'm not an actor.
It messes with your mind.
Especially when I had to do a drug scene. It was like, it doesn't come. It just couldn't. I was more of a clown, slapstick. I'm disciplined in theater, but when it comes to roles that are too close for comfort, I don't feel comfortable, and therefore I can't do them. Ruthie, you were going to say something.
I forgot.
I'm sorry.
It was there, and now it's gone.
But no.
It has something to do with creativity. I was going to say that, in spite of you having a mental illness, I think that if you get the right help, you can achieve your dreams and then some. I mean, if you look at that list of people, I mean, look at what Abraham Lincoln was able to accomplish. I mean, for the love of God, he freed the slaves, you know.
Uh-huh.
And this is someone that, you know, had the stigmatism of depression, but he was able to accomplish great things. And Van Gogh, I knew about him from having visited the museum, but I just think, I don't know. I think we all deal with depression. I deal with depression. I'm stable. I get help, of course. But, you know, there are stressors, and you have to know what your stressors are, and that takes time getting to know yourself and being honest, and it takes a lot to be able to get that honest with yourself. Wouldn't you agree, Michelle?
I do, and stressors are a big thing. Like, the first, you know, like in AA, they say the first step is admitting that you have a problem. It's really the same with mental health treatment. Like, before you can get better, you have to realize that you're sick, you know? And that
right.
takes a lot of people a long period of time to be able to, like, lower that wall of shame and say, yes, I need help. But identifying your triggers is a big part of therapy and getting better, because if you don't know what's making you sick, you can't stop it from making you sick. You know, like if your family or your boss or your job or your living situation is the thing that's really aggravating you the most, knowing that and then being able to deal with it is important. And a lot of people wait until they're in crisis. Like, they will say, oh, you know, I know that I'm feeling depressed, but it's not that bad. I know that, you know, I'm thinking about killing myself, but it's really not that bad, you know. And then they find themselves at the ledge, you know, or with the pills in their hand, or just at the breakdown point, and they don't know where to go. They don't know what to do. And it's important that people know, like, if you are in a crisis and you don't know what to do, you can call 911 and ask for a PERT team. I know they have them in San Diego. I'm not sure if they have them all over the country. But here it's called a psychiatric emergency response team. And it's where instead of just sending officers or an ambulance out to get you, they will send an officer with a therapist to come out and assess you. Or you can go to an emergency room and say, hey, I am feeling super depressed and I don't feel safe. If you're in crisis, that's the thing to do. I mean, that's not the time to call and say, can I get a therapy appointment for 6 weeks from tomorrow? Like, it's okay to ask for help. And if you're not in crisis and you feel yourself slipping, like, oh, you know, I felt pretty crappy for the past 3 weeks. Maybe I should call someone. Like, don't wait. Make the call.
And let's say that you're not strong enough to make that call. What should someone that's on the outside looking in, whether it's a family member or a friend, do to step in and help this person when they're in crisis?
Make the call for them. It can be a very controversial thing. You can lose friends over trying to get your friends help. I've lost friends that way as well. But if when you're saving a life, it really doesn't matter. Like, if your friend or loved one is not in immediate danger, I don't suggest calling, you know, an ambulance. But friends and family can always go to a NAMI group or a website and get information about illness and talk to their loved ones. Like, hey, I've noticed you've been down a lot lately. Like, do you want to talk about it? Or how are you feeling today? Because how are you? Like, the typical answer that you're supposed to give in response is, I'm fine, I'm okay, I'm good. But when you add the word feeling to the end, like, it's pretty clear that you actually want to know how they're doing. Like, how are you feeling? I'm listening. And being an active listener, like, it's not always about problem solving. Like, people don't always want your advice. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they just want you to listen. And it's amazing what people will tell you if you just shut up and listen.
I couldn't agree more. Well, Michelle, we want to really thank you so much for coming on our show tonight and allowing us to ask you questions and get all the resources that you've provided us. Do you have any final words for our listeners?
I would just say, if you need help, look for it, ask for it. Doesn't matter who you ask. Eventually, you will get to someone who can help you. Ask a teacher, a loved one, a friend, someone at the grocery store. Ask a pharmacist. Call 211, national number. They'll help you find services that you need. Just ask for help.
Wow. You know, and that's the thing. I think that we, as human beings, don't want to ask for help. We feel that by asking for help, it just lessens us, and it doesn't. Asking for help actually empowers you, because you're actually looking and seeking out for something that might help. And so
it
shouldn't be
a shame, but it's worth it.
Yeah, it shouldn't be a shame. Well, like Ruthie said, Michelle, thank you so much. I would like to get more information, I guess pamphlets and things like that we can mail out to friends and to people that actually call us or email us. And I know that we can get that. I'll be in San Diego tomorrow, so I will, you know, pass by and pick up some stuff. But just to have you on the show and letting people know that, you know, that the seasons are not always the most wonderful time of the year, the most wonderful time of the year, but there are help, there's help out there that they can reach out for. With that,
right.
I'm going to
find all of the support groups in the country for DBS, they are available at dbsalliance.org. You can search by zip code, find something.
Mm-hmm. Okay, DBS Alliance. Okay, I will put that on our website so that any resources that you give us, that they can seek it out on our website, and they can actually do their work there. And everything is confidential, correct?
Definitely.
Correct.
I have one quick question, and I know we're running out of time, but I really want to know, what do you suggest that someone battling depression do during the holiday season to combat it?
Do something that brings you comfort. If you know that whatever you planned on doing is going to make you really upset, do yourself a favor and don't do it. Take care of yourself. You deserve it.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Thank you.
That is interesting, because thank you so much, because we need to be true to thyself, be true, or to thy own self, be true. And so we need to be truthful to ourselves. And if the holiday season and the people that are around us are not really working out for us, we need to start choosing wisely and, like I say, choose our battles.
Right. It's being gentle to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I'm not going to put my hand in the fire because I know I get burned. So why would I put myself in a situation that I know is going to hurt me? It's not helpful.
Wow. That is so true.
That makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense, but I also think that you have to be at a place where you recognize,
mm-hmm.
you know, that
right.
you,
if
that
you don't
have
know
a
that
problem
putting your hand
and,
in the fire burns you, then you got a problem, but somebody's got to point it out, you know.
Right.
Does that make sense? Like, if you don't know
it
that
does.
What you're doing is hurting you, it's not your fault. But once you do know, it's your responsibility to step out of the way.
Makes
so
perfect
the saying,
sense to me.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense to me. Like, you know, do something wrong to me, shame on you. Do something wrong to me again, shame on myself. So if I continue doing it and not knowing it, I understand. But once I am cognitive about it and I continue going, what is it, going the same, you know, the definition of insanity, doing the same thing.
Doing the same thing and expecting different results.
Exactly. So with
yes.
that, for sure, now our time is almost up. I am going to close off with a prayer. Once again, Michelle, thank you so
much. Thank you
much so much. For being on our show. And I'm looking forward to making sure that we just let everybody know about your organization in San Diego, because, of course, that's my second hometown. New York is my first one. So thank you once again, and I'll open up. I'll close with prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for this day that you've given us. I just want to tell you, Lord, we know that just because we're Christians or we're not, that you're still looking over us, and that we are not sinners, or we are sinners just because we have depression, but because you have a loving grace and you have sent out your angels and you have empowered so many people to give us resources. We know that you love us so much. Lord, we're going into the holiday season. Please bless all those who are listening, that you may give them wisdom and discernment to choose wisely who and what they will be doing this holiday season. In the name of Christ, amen.
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 Thoughts to consider. Depression is serious and will strike whether you are a Christian or not, rich or poor, young or old. However, living with depression should not dictate your worth, your status, or how good you are or not. Remember, we are fearfully and wonderfully made. Psalms 139:14. Never forget that we are all born with a purpose. Be blessed, always educate yourselves, and may God bless us all. Happy Thanksgiving from our staff at the Reborn Identity. Please enjoy the following song, Born with a Purpose, by Angela Bryant Brown, from her latest release, Angela for You. The Reborn Identity Blog Talk Radio was brought to you by the following sponsors: Rushing Media, a full-service public relations marketing and strategy company; Creative Network Solutions, creating possibilities for the future of your business; Palo Enterprises, a professional services company serving the needs of our individuals with notary, title abstract, insurance, real estate, and photography services; and Hype Seminars, preparing, exploring, achieving the power of choice.